slowly rolling into it and off of corner number four. It's showtime at Skagit Speedway.
One car with the front of it that was junk, and another car with the back of it was junk. So I cut both of them in half, took the good part of one car and the good part of the other car, and welded them together.
The reason why I decided to move to Sean's number and use it was just because in memory of Sean was his V8, and I just kind of lived for racing and racing with his number just to remember him by.
Racing, and next thing you know, she's on the flag stand running the, doing flag and all my quarter midget. I'm like, where did you come from?
You definitely have to want it. You can't just say you want it. You got to want it. You got to have that desire that drives you.
I hope they just soak it all in, because you don't know when it could be over, right? Mom and dad can't do this anymore, right? We don't have the money, or we can't find the sponsors, whatever it is. I just soak it all up while it's happening.
That was at Elma. This is a different track. I don't think it'll be the same thing. He's like, oh, okay, you can throw it on. We threw the GoPro on his car, and he actually did pretty good that night, I believe. So we're like, see, convinced him. I was like, see, it's only at Elma. You can't rent a GoPro. And then the next week, I believe he blew up a motor with the GoPro on. So I haven't put a GoPro on his car since then.
Well, welcome into this week's edition of On the Gas, a Skagit Speedway podcast. Blake Anderson, Eric List, and Caleb Hart joins us this week. It's the first week of the 2025 off-season, gentlemen. How's it going?
Caleb, go ahead.
Caleb's busy. We're good. It's real good. I'm looking forward to an unscheduled Saturday for the first time in a long time.
All right.
Not sure what to do with myself.
College football.
So what games are on for college football this week?
It's not a good weekend.
Oh, of course it's not.
Pretty boring.
The Mighty Huskies are traveling to Maryland, I believe. Yeah. So that'll occupy 3.5 hours of my day and
Maryland's
determine how good my Sunday will be.
Yeah. I think I'm going to take CeCe for a hike. Brent Anderson and Kalen found a spot. I think I'm going to take my golden retriever on a little hike.
You know, go check out the scenic overlook that
Mel
suggested.
Mel suggested. Yeah, you missed that, Caleb Hart.
Yeah,
this is when we know Blake is becoming a true Western Washingtoner. He's going to take the dog for a hike, and I'll bet you he has something coffee-ish drinkage to go with him.
Red Bull type thing.
Yeah.
From a coffee stand, probably. Yeah, yeah. I think Brent and Kalen went someplace by Arlington last week. I think they said it was. So we might, as long as it's nice on Saturday, they said they could probably go again. So.
Oh, I think I saw that picture of them down at the Stilly River, I remember
that
right.
That sounds right. So, yeah, yep. I asked him, my golden retriever, she's only 9 months old, so she can't do the big hikes yet and much jumping around because her growth plates aren't closed yet. But
we are pretty spoiled, with where we live. It's very few places in the world that can be half an hour from mountains and hiking and snowboarding and
water.
That kind of stuff, and then half an hour from the beach.
And really, not even a half hour. I mean, shoot. You think?
I mean, you can see, you've seen that picture that I've got. I don't know if you've seen it as the background, but it's the one J.D. Dryden took a few years ago, the overhead that's got Samish Bay out in the background, and it's got the racetrack, and it's got all the wooded area in between it, right?
I'll have to see if I can find that for you.
I don't know if I've seen
that one.
It's
a cool picture.
It's all within 15 minutes.
I mean, High Limits here, High Limit gets some really cool drone shots, and they do the drone shot of, just over the racetrack, and there's the bay. And by the way, a crow flies, I think I measured, I measured it.
You've said eight miles.
7 miles, 7.2 miles by the way a crow flies, or a bald eagle flies.
I don't know
out
how you officially measured that, but.
Google Maps, baby.
Oh,
okay. You can measure distance on Google Maps.
Oh, is that how you did it?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
We're pretty spoiled.
Yeah, we are.
It's easy to forget how beautiful this is. And then when you actually stop and take a look, it's like, there is a lot of beauty around Skagit.
Deception Pass is. Eric and I talked about at the end of the last podcast just how much there is to do around Skagit Speedway and making a trip up here, and including Deming, and a lot of sightseeing you can do all within an hour. And, drive Chuckanut Drive. I've heard that drive is incredible. I need to do that.
That is beautiful.
There's some stuff I need to do this winter.
which is absolutely awesome for those of us that are around all the time. It's awesome for our race fans because, you know, you can have – there's plenty of stuff to do during the day before you come up on a Saturday yeah. night. And at the same time, boy, is that challenging too, because we have to work to get people into our grandstands mm-hmm. against all of that stuff, right? You know, the pull from a lot of locals and people my generation and younger is to get outside and see stuff, go camp, go hike, go do that, right? And sometimes a beautiful Saturday night's a great chance for that. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're choosing to take a Saturday night to do that, you're not at the races. Yeah. It's something that Steve Beitler talked a lot about in the challenges of being a promoter. When I would get to hear him speak in front of business people and other tracks and other promoters and stuff, is like how back in the day, and Blake, you and I talked about this the other day, mm-hmm. back in the day, Saturdays, we woke up and we went to the racetrack. Mm-hmm. April through September, that's what you did, is that you got ready for Saturday night at the racetrack. Now, between casinos, and we've got a lot of great partners through the casinos, but boy, they're entertainment venues, and they're sure using every opportunity they can to try to pull people in to entertain, because they've got comedians, they've got small concerts, some of them with bigger venues have big concerts, there's always music, we've got a ton of professional and semi-professional sports in and around us. Mm-hmm. You know, the pull of trying to get people to come in and enjoy what we're doing, even though we continue to take it up to a different level and doing it better and better and better, but there's just a lot else going on right now that really competes for the entertainment dollars. So no matter how much you can put into it and the work you do to make a better entertainment show for the people in the grandstands, that desire to have variety, and to the extent that some of our casino partners do that variety of entertainment really, really well, makes it even harder.
Do you guys think that's why we've seen racetracks in the recent years, I mean, host more concerts and host stuff like that, because it's that variety and they can yeah. get a different type of audience to come in?
100%. I strongly feel that way. You've got to get people into the stands and let them know you're there somehow. I mean, Caleb and I, mm-hmm. we talked extensively at lunch a couple of Sundays ago about it. And, you know, there's a lot of, you think, oh, this track's been here since 1954. Everyone knows about it in Skagit mm-hmm. Valley, but you don't realize how many people are moving in and out of the Skagit Valley. You know, what percentage of the population has lived here for that many years. And so you constantly have to act, much like I kind of preached to you, Eric, is act like the fans have never been here when they yep. come through the gates. And you have to act like the people in the area don't know it's here, because as soon as you do, I mean, you start resting on your laurels, that's when the crowds stop dropping. And I firmly believe that's why a lot of racetracks from coast to coast are closing, is because they're not changing how they go about. They're not adapting to 2025. I mean, even you guys can test it. It's a lot different. Caleb, you know, the promoting world's a lot different than it even was a decade ago. I mean, yeah. 2015 does not sound that long ago, but no. The world is vastly different, especially when you factor in the pandemic. I mean, that really sped up and fast-forwarded how people go about things, and you have to yep. adapt. It's adapt or die.
The way that we consume entertainment has vastly changed Huge. Just mm-hmm. in 15 years, because smartphones really changed the game. The ability to be on the internet and be connected to anyone and everything at the same time, like, I can't imagine standing in a line without my smartphone anymore.
Oh, I know.
Right? Oh, yeah.
You know, waiting to order a cheeseburger or something yep. like that. My immediate, you know, if I get into a line that's more than 3 deep of any kind, my immediate thing is to grab my phone and
scroll
open
Twitter,
up
Instagram.
Facebook, Instagram, whatever web game I'm playing at the moment, right? So entertainment is always immediately at my fingertips. What is the positive of that? We're connected, right? Mm-hmm. We have the ability to interact, socialize. We have the ability to reach people through all of that stuff. What's the downside to that? People sit around 30 seconds and they start twiddling their thumbs. Uh-huh. Where that attention span used to be vastly longer, you could sit and have somebody there for a period of time and not necessarily have to put something in front of their face. It's the reason that entertainment in general has changed in terms of duration. TikTok keeps people's attention for 15 seconds of video and then moves on, mm-hmm. right? Here is a racetrack. You've had to adapt. You have to adapt or die on that. You have to put something on the track that is visually appealing at all times, or have something running on the big screen that's visually appealing at all times.
Fan engagement that we send Eric out. And Hager harps on us about that every Monday morning.
And he's right.
He is.
So right on that, because anything more than about a minute and people are going to go, okay, and you lose them. You lose them into their phone because all of that extra entertainment and connectivity is so available to you. So the places that are closing their doors haven't adapted to running a different show. Mm-hmm. And today's race show is busier and more involved on our end of bringing that entertainment to our fan than it ever has been. It has to be a shorter show. It has to be a more involved show. And it has to be something different than what they have seen time and time again. Something cool that we do is our schedule has a lot of variety to it.
100%.
Very rarely do you see back-to-back weeks that have the same divisions of cars running on the program, right? And if it is, it's like a special Dirt Cup type event in which you're not necessarily going for a walk-in off-the-street audience. You kind of have a captive audience built in already due to what the event is and the ticket price that they've paid for it. Those nights, you can run out three straight nights of 410s and something else, not have to have the variety to it, and still have people locked in. But again, that is a special I came to watch Dirt Cup
Correct.
Group of people. Mm-hmm. And I think where some of the promoters have lost their way or lost some of their business and don't know where it went to is these groups that were running out the same five divisions of racing every Friday or Saturday night over the course of a year and haven't changed anything. Mm-hmm. And were running too slow of a show to begin with and running a show that didn't have, you know, maybe running five divisions of what we would call support classes and don't have a premier premium like a Wing 410 sprint car, which, you know, it's an expensive class to field if you're on the promotion side of it. But again, all right, I'm watching five classes of cars that all go kind of medium speed and all kind of look the same. It's been the death, the slow, unseen death of promoters, to which, like, sometimes I'll get announcer buddies together and talk, and they go, why are our crowds dying? Why is there stuff? I go, your promoter needs to run a better show. Mm-hmm. Yep. Like, quite literally, you need to put your promoter needs to book a more entertaining show, and your crowds will come back.
Yeah.
And then you need to run that show quickly.
I say, and you say quickly, that's the type of show, too, that you have five classes, and they're like, well, why are we getting done at midnight? Well, because you're running five classes.
Well, it's impossible to get the five-class show done.
Oh,
you just have to be efficient.
You just have to be efficient.
I grew up every Saturday night, Friday and Saturday night, Marshalltown Speedway and Boone Speedway, five classes, 200-plus cars in the pit area.
That's true.
And Boone started at 7:30, and we were out of there by 11.
And they
started at 7:30, and you had 240 cars in the pit area across five divisions. Yeah. I mean, they a lot of times car rolling off the racetrack in turn one, and they had the next heat race rolling on the racetrack out of turn three, and next lap by they're green.
And unfortunately, that's the efficiency that I feel like few racetracks have.
Oh my God.
It's refreshing to when you can see a racetrack that you get one heat off and one heat on.
You have classes, you have divisions, places that are running cars out and putting them on a course in the racetrack that takes a 25 to 30 second lap, and then you're running them for a 30 lap A main event.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's the kind of thing that your fan goes, boy, these guys are going slow.
Yeah.
Right. That's not a fast race car. And now you're, So, I mean, 10 laps takes a minimum of 250 seconds, a minimum of 250 seconds at 25 seconds a lap, right? So one third of your race is guaranteed to take 4 minutes. That's not counting roll onto the racetrack time, roll off of the racetrack time, caution flag time, because dear Lord knows you're going to have a stoppage every once in a while, right? Mm-hmm. So at minimum, if every lap goes at maximum speed of a 25 second lap, right, you are 750 seconds to take your main event, to finish your main event. That's 12 minutes. If nothing goes wrong, not counting your after and before.
Yeah,
and it's too long.
Yeah.
That's too long, right? And especially when you can take it up against a Wing 410 sprint car, which, what was it on Saturday night of our season championship? They had slowed down, but they're still running 14-second laps.
If we're running a 14-second lap, you're looking at a 6-minute feature green to checkered if it goes green to checkered.
And that's still pretty darn good. That's the speed of efficiency that you're looking for and to run that show. So, and again, I don't think people, I think there's some promoters that are still pretty old school and not actually looking at what am I entertaining my crowd with and how long am I depending on each of these divisions to entertain this crowd. Blake, something you and I have talked about a billion times, the modifieds, when they're racing is good. It's really good. We saw that on Saturday night at Survivor 55, right? But unfortunately, up until this year, and this year was a lot better.
Up until this year,
it's those nights of 7, 8, 9 caution flags that end up killing a crowd's interest in that division that night. Mm-hmm. The mods really stepped it up this year and helped us a ton. By racing better still. But those are the things that if you continually do that to your crowd, they're going to quit showing up.
I mean, I look at last year and I came here and it's no secret. I love IMC modified. It's what I grew up going. I grew up, you know, Survive the 55. That was an average Saturday. That's an average Saturday night for where I grew up with. So coming here, I'm like, oh, this will be great. And, you know, I watched a couple of the modified races and I admittedly was beating my head on a wall. I think we finished one race last year. Yep. Inside the time limit of 25 minutes, one out of like 10.
Would that have been the topless race that year too?
That sounds about right. And then this year, we didn't have a time limit race this year.
They were phenomenal.
They did great. They didn't tore up much less, and that'll help grow. But the downside of that, it's going to take time to fix what's already been done on the last 8 years of modified racing here. Like if we can put together another, I feel like a lot of progress was made last Saturday, and if we can put some good races on next year with the modifieds, that'll start to heal. But the other thing is, we talked about in our Monday meeting, Jeff prepped the racetrack on Saturday for modifieds.
That racetrack was phenomenal.
And it was fantastic. And obviously, the sprint cars are very good too, but on the average Saturday night, we're not really prepping it for that because the premier division is the sprint cars. But I feel like we give them the track.
It's a little different. It is absolutely a little bit different trying to do one versus the other. We saw that for years during the sprint cars predominantly era. I go back and I think of how wet and heavy the racetrack was for most of the night during the years that we ran 410s, 360s, Sportsmans, and how challenging that made to race a Hornet, because those things do not get around on a track that's juiced up. It's so hard to drive those cars. They need it to be dry, much like the modifieds showed Saturday night it could be.
Well, that's where we saw the modifieds banging the boards. And I mean, they were running that track like how a sprint car runs, an equivalent of a dry slick up to the wall. And that was really fun to watch. I mean, that first 25 laps of the 55 was phenomenal. That second 25 was good. I don't know if it was as good as the first 25 or give or take 25. It was a 55 lap race, but it was a great track. And yeah, I think Caleb, you said it right.
Bryson James banging the boards the last 10 and just flying around there to make that pass with 2 to go. That was the best 55 we've had. And the first one was really, really good too. But it didn't have the, flourish at the finish. No discredit John DiBenedetti, who won that first one, because there were cars racing in 3 grooves that year too. But Bryson coming and making that pass of 2 to go, I'm going to remember that for a long time.
Yeah, that was impressive. We had, like I said, I feel like we trended in the right direction this year. And to flip the script, another division trending in the right direction to me is this. I mean, I think most of our divisions here are absolutely trending. I think I said in one of our podcasts, a couple podcasts ago, I think we're going to see 410 car counts up next year. I think we're going to see all 3 of our sprint car divisions are going to see car count increases. But it was interesting, you know, a year ago, last spring, we announced that we're going to bring in the Race Saver sprint car motor onto the palette of the Sportsman sprints. And that got a lot of kickback. Let's be honest. It got a lot of kickback from some teams and some folks saying, this is going to be the death of the sporty. We're not running the sporty motor off right now. We're just trying to bring another option to the table. Had several people saying this is going to be the death of that class. Well, this year we had our highest average car count we've had in, you know, 20 plus years. And we ended on a Saturday night with 29 cars. Yeah. And I think next year, Caleb, you've hit on it, several teams going to be moving up from Deming to here, which is what we want to see. It's going to cultivate new talent at Deming and allow them to grow new talent. And then it gets new talent here. So it's a win-win for Paul and us. And I'm excited to see. And several of those teams are going to be in Sporty or are going to be in RaceSaver Motors, which is cool.
Yep. I think that thing that needs to be seen how it's going to play out is as guys are building new cars. And most of your sportsman guys are coming in with somebody's good used equipment.
Yeah.
You'll see 100%. A lot of completely new builds. But my question is going to be, as guys need engines, because, you know, engines have a lifespan to them. As guys need engines, are they going to choose to go to a RaceSaver, or are they going to choose to have another sportsman style engine built?
Uh-huh.
That's going to be giving them the option. Here, guys, choose what mm-hmm. you want to do is going to prove long term what the better option is. And so by doing it the way we're doing it, not saying, hey, you have to have this or you have to have this, but here's another path you can go down. It's a great benefit for the racers because they'll show us which one is the preferred one.
Yeah.
And then we can continue to foster that. What we're going to need to have is a sportsman division that stays fluid.
Mm-hmm.
That class is not designed to be a class that you should run, or in a perfect world, it's not supposed to be a class that you run 15 years in. We want, you know, you to get into it, get to the point where you're good at it, and then have the upward mobility to build a 360 or a 410. So having a strong sportsman class is good, so long as it's not the same strong 30 cars that you had from the previous 2, 3, 4 years. You want to see those guys advancing and moving through on their career.
And I think we are. I think we're going to see.
100% we are.
You know, the top three teams potentially in a 360 next year. Justin, I know they're all Jayden, working Steven, on it. Justin, all, yeah. You know, Steven will be in a 360. Jayden, it sounds like, will. And Justin talked to him on Saturday, and they're working on putting a program together. I know Levi Kuntz is working on tracking a 410 motor down. So there's going to be some moving and shaking, which is good. I think you're exactly right, Caleb. It's not a division where we want a guy hanging out there for 10-plus years. I mean, if you have to, you have to. We completely get it. Like, if that's the top of your budget, then
that's
great.
Fine.
That's perfectly fine. We're, yeah. But we really want it to be where you get in there and that kind of gets your feet wet and you get that itch to get a 360 mm-hmm. or a 410, and, even better.
And part of what the RaceSaver thing is going to play out for us is we know that your cost to drop the trailer door is lower on a given uh-huh. night with the RaceSaver. We know that they're on what should be a longer rebuild between that and your traditional sportsman motor.
Yeah.
That's going to be good. If they're competitive enough, right, guys will make the switch to them and we'll stick with them and do it, right? If they're not competitive, guys won't do them.
And I think we saw they're competitive this year. I mean, our driver that finished second in points, Jayden Whitney, ran a Sporty all year long, and they admittedly didn't really have it figured out till midway through the season, and he missed out on the championship by a point.
Yeah, Macy Logs in the 305 all year was a feature winner.
She's a feature winner. I think there were several RaceSavers through the field because we have at least four of them because we're going to give away four of them at our banquet, the top 12, which I think, how about that being something that, Caleb, you've been in the game even longer than me. I've never seen a track do this.
But a while.
We've got our top 12 in points. We've got four Sporty engines we're going to raffle off that you just had to be in the top 12 in points and you've got a 1 in 3 chance at winning the drawing. You just had to be in the top 12 in points. Like that is points.
Yeah.
That's super correct. Cool. That was really cool.
I'm using ballpark numbers here, but what is that, 80 grand in motors?
Yeah, they're valued, I think, about 20,000.
Yep.
Yep. 80 G in motors that we're giving away on Saturday night of the banquet or Friday night of the banquet. That's
which
cool.
is really neat that, hey, you know, it's going to allow some teams to maybe race a Sporty next year or feed that Sporty motor on down the way to someone else that, mm-hmm. you know, maybe sell it at a cheaper price. Like, and that helps jumpstart their program, so. I think it's a unique opportunity and something really cool. And, of course, a tip of the cap to Kevin Rudine and John Hager for getting that program off the ground. And Galen Stewart's really kind of been the straw and, that stirs the drink on that.
Working well, those hard. Guys have had a lot on their plate. You know what I mean? Just looking at what they've done since taking over now 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Just,
I mean, hit on that. That's something incredible. I want to talk about. What the transition here is, Caleb, you've been here since 2005 announcing.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen
– Yep.
a lot of changes at this place, and I feel like a good majority of them happened in the last 36 months.
They, as far as the new regime goes, Kevin pulled me aside I want to say it was at our advertisers banquet, which usually happens like January, February, where we get our group of partners together and we treat them to a night and have a guest speaker and stuff. And this was coming off, I think, of our first banquet. So this would be like February of 23 or so.
Okay, so after the completion of the first year.
So after completion of the first year, and we had gone through the entire year and we had had our driver's banquet. And he had pulled me inside prior to our partner's night and talked to me for about 5 minutes or so about the way that he has done business. And, you know, I've seen Rudine Racing for a long time. They've been racing at Skagit longer than I have been around, and I always got an outside look at the operation, but never an inside look at the operation. I always went, wow, that's clean, that's professional, that's really put together. You know, all of the things that everybody can kind of see from the outside in. And Kevin spent a little time talking to me about his viewpoints and the way that he likes to have things done. And he made an analogy during that conversation that finally clicked. And maybe it's me being too dense to see it before, but when it clicked, I'm like, oh, God, okay, I see this now. All three of us are hockey fans. Some of us a little bit newer to it than others. Eric's probably been the longer on that one. But,
I am the new one.
Right. And with professional hockey being in Seattle, you know, we're getting a taste of what NHL hockey looks like, where before we had only ever had the Western Hockey League.
Yep.
We had only ever had Silvertips, Thunderbirds, etc. And the way that Kevin explained it to me was, I want Skagit Speedway to be NHL hockey, not WHL hockey. And I'm like, oh, ding. And it worked because I had just come off of seeing a Silvertips game and then seeing a Kraken game back to back. And I'm like, the differences between this from a fan experience are just bonkers. WHL hockey, and I am not running it down.
It's got a great product.
It's got its place, right? And it does well for itself. But it's cowbells, and it's amateur players, mm-hmm. and it's, it's much more.
It's a development league.
It's developmental, right? Mm-hmm. And you want Skagit Speedway to be like the Kraken.
Yeah.
Clean, professional. The fun is ratcheted up a whole nother level, and you're doing it without hokey gimmicks like cowbells.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how much I hate the cowbell at the Silvertips game.
Can't stand him either.
He made that analogy, and I'm like, ding, okay, that goes off. And now I see that, and I see that in the background of what we do, the desire to not half-ass anything.
Mm-hmm.
This is the best that we can make it. And if it's not the best we can make it, there is something insurmountable right now to making it better. Doesn't mean it's always going to be that way, but right now so the idea is Kraken hockey for Skagit Speedway. We are professional motorsports. That's what we're entertaining people with. And the steps that we've made to get there in the 4 years is the biggest eye opener for me.
I think that's perfectly put. I mean, I haven't been here as long as even you, Caleb, but I feel like I've seen that growth too from when I came here as a kid versus now. And that's no disrespect at all to when Steve owned it. I mean, Steve ran a tight ship, but even the changes just have grown. You've seen purses increase. You've seen car counts increase. It's just been another level of buttoned up and put together that I don't think Skagit Speedway always has had, if that's fair
to
say.
This might come off as a little bit arrogant, and I don't mean this to reflect on it in me that way or the racetrack is that way, but during those years, we were competing with other racetracks,
mm-hmm.
right? Skagit Speedway was being compared to you're comparing it to the other tracks on the West Coast and the such like that, and to within people's normal driving distance. Mm-hmm. I think we've moved beyond that,
mm-hmm.
to where Skagit Speedway is now being compared to itself. And we're competing with ourselves. We're not competing to draw fans versus other tracks. we're now competing against professional sports to draw fans into the stands. And what's the standard that we've set, and how can we beat it? And that's, I think that's massively complimentary, not only to what we, to the people who are in charge and what John, Kevin, and everybody who's there on a daily basis, you guys, Lisa, Therese, everybody else, right? But you look at it, we wouldn't be able to do that if we didn't have a good foundation to start from. Steve deserves a ton of credit.
100%.
And it's nice to see that he's getting it now, that he's been able to come back to the track and be appreciated, applauded. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's nice to see him smiling and relaxed as well. But for saving Skagit Speedway and giving us a foundation to build on, and I truly hope that, you know, the legacy of some of the times when resources weren't there to do more is going away, and it's more being, well, here's what we could do, and we left it in a place where we could build it up to be more. Mm-hmm. So he deserves a ton of credit for that, on top of the other things that he's added to racing.
Oh, yeah, it's been one of the most fun things to see him back, here this year. And, I mean, he was here during season championship as one of the numerous nights, and it's just good to see him here and enjoying himself.
Yeah, it was refreshing to see Steve back at the racetrack for the first time since he'd sold the place, and always good to have him around. Mm-hmm. I have a good relationship with Steve and enjoy chatting with him, and I spent a couple of A-mains with him on Saturday season championship, just shooting the breeze with him down in the grandstands when I was up and around, and it was...
Where does he sit in the grandstands?
He kind of, he just stands all over.
Okay.
So I just happened to run across him, and we got to talking, and I had to go do Victory Lane, came back up, and he said, come back up when you get done. So good to have him around. Steve's a wealth of knowledge. He's been everywhere.
He's seen a lot of things.
Yeah.
He's connected to a lot of influential people.
He is. Oh, he is.
Like, for years, you and I would see him in Tulsa, right? And
he was my karaoke partner in Tulsa.
But for years, you know, it would be the three Steves that you would see around in Tulsa. And the three Steves, you look at it, I mean, Skagit Speedway at the time was in, you know, and was one of the places on the West Coast that everybody looked at. Steve Sinclair of the IRA, who's got the most successful regional touring series you're going to find. And then Steve O'Neill of Port Royal. And we know how well Port Royal is spoken of and all the wonderful things it does. Those three guys, they're movers. And, you know, hobnobbing with influential people and other successful people just made us better.
And it's we're continuing to strive. This year was a great year for Skagit Speedway. Going back to something we hit on, I had a chance to speak at the State of the Sport board panel at the National Sprinkler Hall of Fame during Knoxville Nationals, and you hear all these tracks talking about how we're dying. And to get to tell these tracks, hey, we're up at Skagit Speedway across the board. Car counts are up. Crowd counts are up.
In the most expensive state in the nation.
Yeah, exactly. Like
to
it
live
was,
in. Yeah, we're making it. We're making it.
Everything against us, and we're still powering forward. And I told a buddy back home, the thing that maybe hurts us a little bit that we can't afford is when we lose a car, say we junk a car, like that's a car lost for us.
Yeah.
It's not like we can dip into another pool and go find, you know, oh yeah, well we've got guys coming from Idaho this week out or whatever. Like we are on an island, a dirt track racing island here in the state of Washington. I mean, legitimately there's weekly full-size race cars. There's two dirt tracks in our state. There's us and Elma, and then you add in Deming that runs the micros, so three. I mean, that's what we've got out here, where I was telling Eric and Therese and Lisa one day, I mean, growing up in central Iowa, you could draw a 60-mile or a one-hour radius around my hometown, and I think there was 12 dirt tracks that operated weekly.
Mm-hmm. And they all probably had, what, upwards of 30 cars in a division, maybe?
All are successful.
Yeah.
All are highly successful.
Look at where Knoxville draws from for their weekly shows.
Oh, I mean, they're drawing.
You know what I mean?
We've got Knoxville. We have season-long campers that would drive down 5.5 hours from Sioux Falls or 4.5 hours from Sioux Falls every week.
You got North Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa,
Dobbin
Nebraska, running
weekly from Grand Forks,
Missouri. All kinds of people, right? Coming not just with cars, but fans, like you said, right?
Justin Fiedler was talking about how the late model nationals is a little bit of a struggle, and I will disagree with Justin on this. He said, well, look at, you know, it's a sprint car fans. It's a sprint car state, but it's really not. We have Knoxville Raceway, and then we have 50 IMCA modified dirt tracks in the state.
Right.
Like, it's not as, it's a, Sprint car count, Marion County is a sprint car county, but the other 98 counties in the state of Iowa are modified counties.
How did that happen that way? Was it just kind of how it all developed and got built?
Yeah, I mean, Knoxville just kept growing, 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 and they were running sprint cars, and state fairgrounds ran sprint cars, but that died off because it wasn't super successful. And even 34, they run sprint cars probably about more than anybody, 34 Raceway there on the Mississippi River on the east side of the state. But they're really a weekly modified track. They run 305s weekly, but, I mean, 34 is a phenomenal facility. I love the racing at 34. I just hate that they try everything, and I don't feel they get the crowds that they deserve at their sprint car shows because they put on phenomenal shows, and Brad and Jesse care. So if you're back home listening, go to 34, support them, because that's a great racetrack. Donaldson's running some more sprint car races now because the Powerice series is going there. That's Lee County, and that's, once again, on the east side of the state, just south of Iowa City.
It's just – like you said, it's just kind of weird that Friday nights in Iowa's sprint car
took off.
Yeah, never ever took off. I mean, you've got, like you said, 34 is good. That Sprint Invader series has been strong for many years.
It's just, you know, it's 1,500 to win 360s, and just it's strong on the east side of the state. Never ventured outside of eastern Iowa, western Illinois.
I mean, everybody kind of has their niche. You know what I mean? They found that. It's a great little niche for them.
IMCA is headquartered in Iowa. I mean, Vinton, Iowa is the headquarters of IMCA. So that's kind of been the bread and butter. And they worked hard in the 70s and 80s to develop these racetracks. And then the Roots bought IMCA in the 90s, and it exploded.
Yep. Kaboom.
Boone and Marshalltown.
Which, you know, it's not like sprint car racers aren't devoid of options. That's one of those things. Like, you're gonna run Knoxville all year, so you're gonna get County Nationals, 24 Wing 410 shows or something like that, right?
On a big
half mile, that takes a lot of resources to run that and run it successfully. So for some of those guys, it makes sense to field a car on Saturday night to run Knoxville Raceway. The guys with more resources, there's enough within a reasonable travel distance, especially if you want to go over to Huset's on Sunday. The Dobmeier run of
the 2000s is incredible.
That was impressive.
Yeah, that's been nuts. So you kind of need something on a Friday night to be a little bit closer, but again, depending on where you're traveling from.
Todd tried. I mean, Jackson's the classic place of the race fans complain they don't get enough sprint car shows. Todd gives them a sprint car show, they don't show up. Todd pulls sprint car shows, the race fans moan that they lost sprint car shows. I mean, to me, it's the state fairgrounds in Iowa all over again. Yeah. I announced there on Friday nights for a while, and people complained and cried when the fairgrounds went away because the state fair turned it into a concert facility. I would announce on Friday nights to 250 people.
Yeah.
And all the people crying, you'd ask them,
feasible.
Well, when was the last time you went there? Well, I'm like, that's exactly why the racetrack is closed, because you said well and didn't go and support the place. So
that
if you want to cry,
like a Yakima dirt track.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, if you don't want your tracks to close, stop finding excuses to not go and go support them. If you want
we would go over and run Yakima dirt track.
Yeah, in the spring and the fall.
4 nights a year. Yep, spring and the fall. And it really started out as just the fall. The fall was the traditional finale to Northern Sprint Tour, ASCS Northwest, etc., the Touring 360 Series season. It was the traditional finale to that. And then Steve saw a reason to start our own touring interconnected 360 series that ended up getting the sanctioning call for those races. And the September race, your fair ticket was your ticket into the race, right?
Okay.
So you'd have a bunch of Western Washington people come over, and then a bunch of people who had never seen sprint car races come over, come out and fill the grandstands. And I mean, as far as a race goes, it wasn't great. As far as an event goes, it was killer. You know, you'd be outside, you get to do fair food, and we know how much I love food, and I don't need to talk about my continuing expanding waistline, but like those Friday Saturdays, it was cold as a son of a gun, and the racing wasn't great, but as far as a good time, it was a darn good time. Then we were like, hey, let's try this in the spring. We should be able to get, you know, the same Western Washington people that come over, and maybe we can get some of the fair people that came in during the fall to come check out the spring race. And it's a, you know, it's a place to start the season a little bit earlier. The weather was always good enough. It wasn't, it was still cold, but it was dry. So, hey, we can get the lid lifted on your sprint car racing 3 weeks earlier than you traditionally can and get guys started on their build process. And there's a whole lot of good reasons for doing it. And for 3 years, we ran the Summer Thunder Series. I think we called it the
Summer Thunder. Yeah.
A few times. And we would get all those people from Western Washington that we would see coming over that would come over for the fall race and about five locals. Like, hey, I don't know your face. Where are you from? Oh, that's the five people that bought tickets from the Yakima Valley this week. Perfect. They didn't, same idea, right? They'd love it when they could come in and they could do the fair and the races, but the races as a standalone weren't enough to move the needle. And with a fairgrounds track, as far as the facilities go, you're kind of dependent on the fair to put money into their facilities. Otherwise, you don't have anybody. Most people are not going to go, hey, I get to rent this thing two times a year and I'm going to drop big five, low six digits into renovating a track that needs new clay, needs equipment, needs new lights, needs new sound system, needs new scoreboard. I could just continue with the needs and needs and needs. And it didn't make sense, especially if the fair wasn't going to support it in trying to keep that thing up and going. And that's why the fair races went away. And people are still, why don't we go run the fair? Well, the fair was only viable as if it was something as if the Yakima was going to support themselves. And once they quit supporting it, it wasn't going to continue to be a functional working thing from all of us all the way up in, you know, basically South Canada where we are to bring all the stuff we needed over to make a viable race.
How much did you have to bring over? Did you bring pretty much everything from track prep to microphones or?
Was limited in, so as far as track prep went, Steve would bring the grader.
Oh,
and
really?
The water truck.
So do you have to
just put him on a
trailer, the grader, trailer, and maybe drive the water truck?
Yeah, we were lucky enough. He always had some really good partners that were willing to help him out with like a big flatbed or something like that to get that stuff over. But you did still have to get it over a mountain pass. Yep. And, you know, sometimes a mountain pass in late March, early April that wasn't super happy yet. So they would bring that over. They couldn't bring the Lele. Or the, you know, the disker, the little thing that we'll see Jeff take out in the middle of the night just to fluff the racetrack up.
Yep.
And that was a problem because it was, if the track started sealing over and it was Yakima and God, the track would take rubber and seal over fairly easily because the material was old and old and old and needed to be replenished and never was. To keep the rubber from coming, you had to water the ever-loving you-know-what out of it. Water and pack, water and pack. You couldn't go and break up the top and then do a light water and a repack. So, and then the second night was inevitably always drier, heavier, or not heavier, drier and more of a tire eater than the night before. So the inability to get the Lele Rotera over there really hurt. I would bring mixer board, music, all of my own audio stuff. And they had a big, gigantic, like 1992 Mackie board with 18 plugins to go work off of it. And the sound system wasn't that great. Like the horns in the grandstands were okay enough.
Yeah.
And then they would bring in some speakers that they would hang on the front straightaway. Oh. That would plug into it. But again, you're powering it with a board that's 372 years old, right?
Yeah.
So it just didn't make a whole lot of sound. It was suboptimal. But the people who ran the facilities guys and stuff were always super nice. So that was cool. But yeah, you ended up bringing and taking a lot of stuff. And then you would end up calling the race. You either went up to the Crow's Nest, which the Crow's Nest, I thought about going up into one time and started walking up the stairs and felt like I was going to fall through the stairs and just went, no. The Crow's Nest is an open, like traditional top of your stadium, just little box, open air that would give you visibility of the whole track, but was also covered in like bird droppings and rat stuff, and I was like, hey, hantavirus, fun, and took a pass on that. So you would call from inside what used, so it used to be a horse racing track, and you would set up, that's where all the audio was set up, you would set up from inside the glass walls of the horse racing track. And, you know, if you think I complain about the visuals from our tower, I forget how bad trying to call from the horse racing box seats were.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it was enclosed, so it was warm in there, thank God. But, like, it was also, it would be like watching the races from three rows up in our grandstands and trying to call a race.
Oh.
It was really flat, and you had all of the windows, which would give you both reflection and then sometimes the bracing for the windows, where you couldn't see anything out of. Hmm. So it was challenging.
Okay.
Fun, but challenging. Also, there was like no actual like seating. So to work on the podium that the audio stuff was on, and Andrew Kunis has a picture of this, I would stack like six chairs on top of each other and sit on the top of the six chair stack.
Okay. All right.
Do what you got to do to get her done.
Fair enough. Yeah, make it work. So were you there the 1 year the Outlaws went there?
That was 2000.
No. Yeah, before my time.
Okay, okay.
Randy was. Pratt went over and helped out with that.
I would have been curious to know what that setup looked like.
Right.
Yeah, that would
have been early years at Gibson. Yeah, I am sure that John had a bunch of fun trying to figure out where he wanted to get set up for that.
That was previous to like internet broadcasts, even Dirt Vision being, you know, Dirt Vision audio call on the internet. So, I mean, really, I'm sure he probably just came in and announced. Because that sounds like that's how it went in the early goings for him. But then obviously everything's really evolved. And, you know, in the late, the mid-2000s, we got the Dirt Vision audio call online every night. You could listen to every broadcast. That was a big deal.
You that was huge.
Turn Dirt Vision on and listen.
Why like, have they done away with that?
Oh, they want you watching. I mean, it's all the money game.
See, I would still pay for if I had to pay $5 to listen to it, I'd pay that to listen to it over.
But they want you paying, and I get it.
Yeah, I get that. I get it too.
I get the model.
Yeah, I mean, the streaming has really renovated how both series have done things.
I'll
know?
Give them credit. There, you watch a Dirt Vision broadcast for the Outlaws. It's a top-notch broadcast 100%. From top to bottom.
Oh, God.
I mean, it has a TV feel to it. They put out a great product, as does Flow Racing, obviously. I mean, that's why we do so much with Flow here. But we are very lucky. I mean, there's a lot of fans that don't realize, you know, 7 years ago, you were lucky you got maybe 10 outlaw races a year, the All-Stars, we probably had more broadcasts than anyone with Speed Shift, and we did about 30 to 35.
Yeah.
But it was all pay $19.99 to watch tonight.
You think of the structure of it, Blake. Like, if Flow Racing didn't exist, I don't know that High Limit would exist.
Oh, I can tell you, it 100% would not exist. Yeah. 100% would not exist. The All-Stars would still be what the All-Stars were always intended to be.
A great regional series.
Strong regional series, and we never would have sold. I mean, I'd probably still be working for the All-Stars. It would have been a strong – we were really going good, especially when Speed Shift got involved. And it was a great stepping stone, and we'd have kind of been the AAA feeder series to the Outlaws and continue to develop talent. I think that's kind of what we're missing in sprint car racing right now. Even with the All-Stars being back, it's a very, very –
doesn't feel like
they had to scale it back because they had to. I mean, it's exactly what we would have been if Tony wouldn't have sold the series. And we'd have kept trying to be. We'd have had to be what the All-Stars were this year. Keep it within four hours of Columbus, Ohio, and you've got some, you know, the Ohio names that are maybe just don't want to run Attica Fremont every week.
Yeah.
Right. And on the Outlaw side, like really the growth of Dirt Vision is the growth of the company.
Oh, as far 100%. As that goes,
right. Right.
I
mean, yes.
I worked there before Dirt Vision expanded. I was there and saw it.
Yeah. Dirt Vision's expansion has been their business expansion at this point in time. Absolutely. The vision that Brian Dunlap and those guys had, early on as to what they could do with that and how it's vastly changed over time to be the monster that it is right now.
Dunlap's vision has made them millions.
Yes. Yeah.
Millions.
Well, to the point where, I mean, you look at it, the studio show, the technology that they're able to employ on that one. And, you know, beyond Dunlap, Jackson Steele's done a fantastic job running the ship at the track, right?
They've got a great group down there. I mean, I Dunlap is one of my favorite people. I love chatting with Brian. He is a great dude. And I look forward to seeing him in Tulsa every year and try to catch him when I'm out in Knoxville if he's there, if he's around. And he is a grade A human being, and they're very, very lucky to have him. And Jim Schiapelli's really upped the game there and brought a more TV feel coming from the TV world. And and I know that side a little bit better. And, you know, look at what we've done at Flow with, say, we, because we're just on it so much, Caleb. And,
right.
You know, Tyler McKim, I feel like, is a Tyler is a rising star in the production world. He is very quick on the fingers and does a phenomenal job. The way he sees a show and produces a show is top notch, and it pains me to say nice things about Tyler because
it does not.
I know, I love Tyler. Yeah. I spent more time with those two at producing, you know, as they produced all-star shows, and watching Tyler progress in producing all-star shows. You know, he spent two full seasons with us out on the road, and his growth as a producer from 2022 to 2023 was massive. And now watching him where he is now, I mean, I think he's probably one of the best. Yeah. We're lucky in sprint car. You know, you've got Jackson on the Outlaws, and Jackson's the same thing. He's a phenomenal producer, and we've got Tyler McKim with High Limit, that both of them know how to produce a grade A show.
And look how spoiled we are, right? And we can go back and forth. And you and I are both lucky enough to know guys on both sides of the plate, right? Uh-huh. What a crisp, cool production they run over on Dirt Vision, from, you know, what Brian saw and like you mentioned, all the way down to, you know, all the way down to like Connor working the infield stuff that they do, right?
Well, Connor's been phenomenal.
He was a phenomenal hire for them. So
great.
And then flip side of that, McKim doesn't get enough credit for not just, you know, what he's grown to as a producer, but like how quick his decision making is in the moment and how he cuts a race.
Oh, I mean, there's several crashes that we had that he couldn't have flipped any faster. I don't think it was any humanly possible.
The one that we always come back to is going to be the Torgerson flip at Tulsa,
he
right?
Was off that.
Quick he was off that. That was insane reaction time.
On the phone with Michael Rigsby, who is the president of Flow Racing that night. And I said, Michael, you've got a freaking gem with McKim, because he couldn't have, like, as fast as he flipped off that, I don't know how he did it.
Yeah, it was nuts. In real time, it was nuts. Yeah, in real time, it was absolutely
crazy.
What
did he flip to? I can't remember now.
I think he flipped to just a dead shot, but I mean, he got off of that shot. I mean, before Ashton was even done flipping. Like, it was, you don't even really know what you were looking at.
Yeah. The last thing I remember is Ashton half out of the car.
Yeah.
And that's as much as it got, because he was somewhere else. And you think about the reaction time that took.
Oh.
And you look at the team McKim's built with him.
Yeah,
too, right?
Got a like, great A team down there.
Rod Chet is so good at audio.
Oh, oh yes. That's what I was like when Chet was coming here. Chet's the best in the business.
Yeah.
Yep. And then the shooters that they bring with them.
You know, Mills and Converse. Yeah. Jeff Converse. I mean, I'm biased because Jeff is – I mean, I did 600 races plus, more than 600 races with Converse.
Other than being a Detroit Lions fan, he's a pretty good guy.
He would lead me. He got to know me so well, he would lead me to what I was going to talk about before I even knew what I was going to talk about. Like, he would just get me there.
Which is the secret, like, backstory of this whole film and announcer thing, right, is that half the time, depending on who's shooting, you're leading them. The good ones lead you.
100%.
Jeff would lead me. He would get me to where – I mean, I would be going somewhere or knowing what I was going to do next, and before I'd start talking about it, Jeff was already there.
Yeah.
Like, he knew what I was going to do and when I was going to do it. Like, it was incredible. He blew me away. And, you know, we got Dean Mills, and Mills is an incredible story. And, geez, I look at Dean and I look at Jeff Converse, and – the way the sport's gone, those two should be in that building in turn two in Knoxville. Like, absolutely, wholeheartedly.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It was a shame it took Greg Stevens that long to get in.
17 times over.
But it's that process is a little frustrating sometimes. But now, more than ever, those guys, we get to see their talent every night. And Jeff has really cut his travel schedule back quite a bit because, you know, he's
–
just
to the
life.
Point where I don't think we're going to see him in Tulsa this year.
I need to ask him. Yeah, I don't know.
I remember somebody telling me that. We will get to see Mills, which, you know.
Yeah, Dean will be there. I'll see Dean in a couple weeks in Tulare. And Dean is – I love catching up with Dean. And we were going to try to do lunch when he was here for High Limit. It just didn't work out. But Dean is He's Dean. I love catching up with Dean. I've done a lot of stuff with Dean through the years. I mean, in my days where the cushion would fly me around when I was in college, and it'd usually be Dean and I out capturing, or Brian and Ian would say, hey, can you go get these interviews at the Chili Bowl? And it'd be Dean or Jeff and I going and getting them, and they'd post them. I mean, you look at the broadcasting side of things, it's the cushion. Those guys were ahead of the game. And Ralph Capitani, we broadcast weekly at Knoxville Raceway in 2009, my first year there.
Which is impressive.
2009, every race at Knoxville Raceway was streaming.
What'd you stream to at that time?
The cushion.
The cushion?
They went to Cappy and said they could do it, and Cappy was all about it. And I remember in 2012, Toby Cruz, before Toby got involved with the Speed Shift guys, was kind of an anti-streamer. He was like, we don't need to stream, blah, blah, blah. He went to the cushion and said, how many people within like a 2-hour radius are streaming every week? Like, how many fans is this costing us in the grandstands?
Yeah.
And they found out it was like 4 people, and 2 of them only were home watching because they had surgery and couldn't get out of the house. So it's like, okay, this is a viable option. Then Toby went on to kind of be the seed money that launched Speed Shift. And then I think the biggest thing, two huge things for Flow Racing that they did, in my opinion, was purchase Dirt on Dirt and get Michael Rigsby. That's the biggest.
Yep.
Because before, Flow was kind of trying to bid on some things with the All-Stars, and it was pre-Rigsby, and maybe the money was there, but the production, they'd struggled. Like, the USAC, with USAC the year before, it was kind of a dumpster fire. Races dropping, so we stayed with Speed Shift. And then the day that Michael Rigsby announced that Dirt on Dirt was being acquired by Flow, I called Jared Free, my boss, and said, no, we don't need to worry about anything now with Flow. Take that offer. Like, Rigsby's there. It will be top notch, 100%. And then, a year later, they end up purchasing Speed Shift and getting Darren Shanley and Chet. I mean, that was a phenomenal addition right there. So those two acquisitions, I feel like, are the biggest things Flow Racing has ever done, especially gaining customer support and customer confidence.
Rigsby very much understands major races
especially how to make them.
Yeah, and how to make them feel like a big deal through the screen. Like, he gets that. That is a mark that off. And I'm not a huge dirt late model fan. I don't know much of the world. We don't have a lot of it around
here.
But I'll watch all of those broadcasts from Eldora time and time and time again. They're incredible. Just from, the insider production value of what they're doing. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, it's
They've
boomed. We're lucky.
And to take this conversation all the way around back to the beginning, right? Promoters who are still anti-streaming, I think, are missing the big picture. Run a good enough event that people want to be there live.
I've said that from the beginning when promoters would say that streaming's killing racing. Not if you put a quality product out there. Exactly.
Yeah. We've seen it this year with our YouTube stream. Exactly. It's got us people wanting to come here.
Our attendance is up, and for the second straight year, attendance is up, and we stream for free. F-R-E-E, free on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You don't have to give us a nickel, pay a nickel.
Right.
I mean,
all we're asking is that you hit a subscribe button, and you don't even have to do that. Our stream numbers were up. Our grandstand numbers were up.
Our streaming numbers this year were up 300%. And our grandstand numbers again up again. Like, it works. Mm-hmm. If you exactly what you said, Caleb. If you have a product where people feel like they have to be here and see it in person, they'll be here. And if they can't, it's a great secondary option. But you can't beat
that night. That night that little Johnny is too sick to go out and sit in the cold on that night, but you still really, really want to see the races. Cool. I have an option, right? Mm-hmm. And that keeps them engaged in the racetrack and the messaging that we've got going on. And frankly, I think the added value for our partners as well.
Oh, 100%.
That's where our GM sees it, is John.
Yeah. We've got X many people that are still watching, hearing the ad reads, seeing the signboards and stuff like that.
Watching your commercials,
Bazinga. You're not in the grandstands, but we're still hitting another, that 1,500 people.
Oh, at least,
we've got, 10,000 people in the grandstands, 1,500 people watching. You're reaching a lot of people there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, integrate the reach of our social media and all the people that can clear into that as well, right? Like, the racetrack has gigantic reach And that is, I do sympathize for some of these places that are still, that are struggling to draw crowd and such like that. We have an incredible opportunity where we are, just with population base.
We do.
Yeah.
And the amount of people we can hit, where, you know, you were talking about 34 Raceway, which is a phenomenally run joint, right? But what's the population base if you drive an hour anyway from there?
Oh, yeah. Now that the Burlington is decent size, there's maybe, you know, 150,000 people in an hour radius.
Exactly. Where we've got a million.
Yeah.
Right.
But
so,
as you talked about it earlier, Caleb, we've got a lot of people, but we also have
a lot of different ways for them to spend money and go do.
Exactly. There's a million different things for them to do. You know, on any given Saturday night, you've got the Netflix and all that. Then that everybody faces, but then you've got the Seattle Mariners, and the Mariners this year having a record season.
Yep.
You know, you've got all the hiking you could ever want to do. You've got all these farm and home shows and everything. Like, it's just, there is a lot to do in an hour and 15 minutes of the racetrack, let alone an hour.
Yep. Yeah. You want a paddleboard, you want a bowl, you want to do
hike,
skydiving.
Yeah, yes. Now we've partnered with Snohomish Skydiving.
We've got sunset balloon rides. I mean, you name it. You can find it here.
Whale watching. Exactly. Yeah. Whale watching tours. There's a lot to do here. And then you haven't really even factored in all the tourist sites inside Seattle that a lot of people do. I mean, I admit it. I'm a sucker
I've lived in Western Washington for 20-plus years, and I still haven't done maybe a quarter of what Seattle has to offer in terms of
what's in their downtown.
It is. I mean, I'll admit, I am a sucker. Like, if someone says, let's go to Pike Place Market, I'm all in.
Pike Place,
couldn't be more in. Or let's go down to the Needle. Absolutely. I love being around the people.
And of the many things we complain about in our state and the fact that it is pretty expensive to live in, the one thing that they have kind of got right is that light rail system.
The light rail is phenomenal.
Vastly easier to travel.
$3 to get downtown rather than $35 to park for the day, which is what you were doing, parking across, you know, by Mopop.
And the stress of making the drive in bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Yep, and then you pay $7 to ride the monorail down to World's Fair, and everything's right there.
Yeah,
I was telling you, when I went to the Mariners game when they clinched the playoff seed, I was at $6 light rail ride from the Linwood Park and Ride that took absolutely nothing.
And free parking.
Down, and that's 40 worth it. Minutes back.
And free parking at Linwood.
It made too much sense not to do it that way.
My mom and dad and brother and sister-in-law and niece were out here the week before High Limit, and we went downtown every day. Kind of, you know, this is the only time we're here. We need to check off all of the cliche things to do in Seattle. And we're like, screw parking. We're going to ride the train. You know, instead of it cost us less to ride the train than to park all day.
Yeah. I remember what I mean. It wasn't. And they're doing a good job of just expanding it. It's coming farther and farther north.
It's going north. Now it's across the lake.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, come see us at Skagit Speedway. We're only an hour from Seattle. There's a ton to do out here.
We're actively working on getting light rail up to our track.
Yeah, we are. We're pushing them to bring the light rail another hour north. But I mean,
what happens first, the new tower or light rail?
Oh, boy, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Not holding my breath on either.
I will say I take my bias out of it because I told John Hager this before even coming to work here was even an option. I've been to 100 and almost 90 dirt tracks. This is the most picturesque track in the country.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, Calistoga probably up there too, but I'll put us up against anybody. Like, you know, we've got
the trees, the mountains, sunsets.
The trees, the sunsets, the water.
Mm-hmm.
The fall crisp air is here.
Well, who knows, Blake? I mean, under the new restructuring of the world, maybe you and I get a chance to go see Calistoga coming up in 2026.
You never know. I mean, shoot, that's something we can, you know, news and notes we can hit on before we close things up. It, you know, been going an hour now, but obviously, Kevin, we've got
three announcers together.
There's going to be plenty to talk about. We can go forever. We've got Trophy Cup coming up in 2 weeks. That's going to be big. I know we've crossed 50 pre-entries and working on getting, you know, last year was 64. I think that we can be in that neighborhood, potentially even top it. You know, Lisa's been working hard on that, and John and I were going over pre-entries and entries on who hasn't. So, and John's heading down there this weekend to push people to enter. So, then that's on Flow Racing. So, you'll be able to watch that. That'll be my first trip to a dirt track in California, ironically. But that's big news. And then the news of the week came out Monday. Kevin and Brad Sweet purchasing NARC. And I think that just gives us more power on the West Coast on scheduling and being able to work with everyone and make sure we're scheduling 410 races in the right places to grow them and continue to grow 410 racing on the West Coast, which is the ultimate goal.
I was watching the Rodman Rundown, watching it last night.
John and I watched it last night before we left.
Yep, Chase is talking about the thing, and I thought he made a lot of really good points. I think there's a sweet spot in scheduling for a traveling 100%. Series, and the little tinkering of purses would probably do that a lot of good.
Well, that's what blew me away coming out here, is I saw all the talent on the West Coast. We've heard about it for years. And then I saw the NARC purse. And I looked at it compared to everything else in the country. I'm like, it's the worst regional touring series purse in the country, in the most expensive area in the country.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think we can tweak that a little bit. It doesn't need to be $1 million to win and $1 million to start. But if we can get to five and five, that'd be good.
Yeah, to their credit, Jim and Brent have been working on that consistently.
Chase hit on it. Look at the money.
Yeah,
and the money they've got. They've done little by little, and I think this year
$800,000 given out this year. Now, what I'd be interested in is what their numbers would run, because I'm assuming that all the numbers that Chase had were all taking into account Dirt Cup as part of that.
And that was $353,000 right there.
Yeah.
Right. So if you took Dirt Cup out of that, because Dirt Cup's been counted in the NARC stats since 2022, right?
It went from 50 to winning.
What does that scale look like, right?
Yeah.
How does that change? How does their car count number change with that scale, with that one individual event out of it? Because
that would be interesting.
Dirt Cup exists, right? And it's awesome that it's existed with NARC, because having them back has helped bring cars back to it.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
However, Dirt Cup could exist without NARC. We don't want it to, right?
And I think so, it won't, which is good.
Which is awesome. But I think to an extent you need to pull that out of the calculations, because it's its own – what am I trying to say here? It's its own event that is – not indicative of what their tour is doing week in and week out.
Yep.
That's a good point.
But you look at their schedule, Caleb, this year, and they have a lot more 5,000, 7,500 to win, 10,000 to win races than they have had in the past, which you just chip away at it, you know, little by little. But I think Kev and Brad obviously have more resources to invest in that, and you're going to have some more backing from Flow Racing now, which will be good. And I think you're going to see that grow, and I really think – John and I were talking about it last night. I think we really hammer home NARC after dark, NARC after dark. Like, just embrace that and run with it.
Yep.
Wait
on the East Coast, check out NARC after dark.
Exactly. I told John after dark,
yeah.
You know, Steven that runs Master Gassers, who is a phenomenal Twitter account. Like, he phenomenal graphic stats. Give Master Gassers a follow on Twitter and on Facebook. He kind of coined a nightcap with Skagit Speedway, and I told John that last night. Like, we can kind of embrace that's a solid little thing we can kind of run with. It's a nightcap at Skagit Speedway. You know, they got NARC after dark and a Skagit Speedway nightcap, and now we can kind of work alongside each other. I think you're going to see 410 Racing. It's obviously not going to be in the best spot it's ever been, because that's going to be hard to do and hard to top what NARC, you know, NARC and 410 Racing was on the West Coast in the 90s.
Right.
But I think we can get it. We can get it back to the best spot 410 Racing's been in 20 years on the West 100%. Coast. I think that's
you get the best spot for the time you are right now.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty easily attainable.
If you could get NARC to regular B mains, I think you would be in a perfect spot.
I think you'll see NARC work a lot with SCCT on scheduling, so we can get, you know, we can get some SCCT guys and vice versa. Yeah. SCCT guys can, you know, can get some NARC guys and really grow both ways. Obviously, we work well with SCCT. You know, Scott and Cammy, we had them up here for the 360 race, and I think that was a huge hit.
Yes.
Our count was very, very strong. Was as strong as we've seen it in 18 years.
And it was a really good show.
It was. So
Maine was good.
That'll grow, and now we won't have a NARC race, hopefully, on top of our 360 show. So there's another 5 to 8 cars.
And show.
So one of our car owners from Skagit on somebody's Facebook thread for the announcement of Brad and Kevin taking over NARC was, right, like, I love this idea, but I wonder why they keep trying to kill 360 Racing on the West Coast. I'm like, I don't think they're trying to kill 360 Racing at all.
Oh, no.
I think
we're trying to grow 410s.
I think there's a world where both of them can thrive. In fact,
100%.
If 410 Racing is thriving to an extent, 360 Racing kind of has to come with it.
Yeah, well, you stop guys poaching.
Yes.
So right? I had a prominent member on the West Pacific Northwest 360 sprint car scene talk to me at a racetrack this year and was complaining about Skagit Speedway trying to kill 360s, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just sitting there thinking
by paying them more?
Who has the best 360 sprint car purse in the country?
That'd be
Skagit Speedway. So the track that offers the best 360 purse in the country for 360s is trying to kill 360s?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
While we're not running them weekly anymore, sure.
We're not running 410s weekly
anymore. We're not running
410s
weekly, but you can also look at our crowd, and our crowds are significantly better when the 410s are running. We're just trying to grow 410 racing, and I think you are wholeheartedly right, Caleb. If we can continue to grow 360 racing, or 410 racing, 360 racing will come with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll stop seeing, you'll get guys that can kind of carve out that niche in the 360 world. You know, 360s obviously aren't as strong here as they were 10 years ago. But also 10 years ago, you had, you know, Elma had a decent 360 mm-hmm. field. We had a good 360 yep. field here. You had the ASCS Northwest that had good 360 fields.
Oregon.
Sprint car racing was much stronger in Oregon. And
that's
sprint
cheaper
car racing,
than it even is
Sprint
now.
Car racing down in Oregon is, to I mean,
in
right
trouble.
Now, is yeah. it's on, its heartbeat is faint.
Life support, yeah.
They're trying to keep it going. Yeah. And
we would get support out of Edmonton. We would get support
yeah,
out
exactly.
of Montana.
Yeah,
and 360 Racing is not in a great shape in either of those places.
No, and it's getting better in Montana. John's done better, but that's also, you know, that's also 15 hours away.
Yeah.
Huh?
But, you know, look at Edmonton. We there, you know, in the early 2010s, we had 5-6 guys weekly coming from Edmonton. And they also had a
yep.
track up there. Now there's nothing,
yep.
and we have Jordan Milne. That's it.
Yep.
Yes. Thank you, Jordan.
Yeah. Oh, great. And Brad and Jordan,
I'm
they're
glad
great.
We can provide them a place
I
to race.
I love when I get to go down and talk to Brad. He is
yeah.
He is one of my favorite people to talk to down there. He hollers at me every time, and I appreciate that. But you look, they're the lone wolf now. And 10, 15
right.
years ago, they were five
Clax.
Cars. They're from
yeah.
BC.
Oh, you're talking. Okay, sorry, I see what you're
talking.
It's
Edmonton.
Never,
Edmonton. Okay.
Yep.
And the way that the world is right now, I don't think it's ever going to get to the place where you can depend on a huge traveling contingent from Edmonton, Montana, Oregon
no, I don't
to
think
come.
So.
However, what you want is for them to be able to provide 20 plus cars, 15
yeah.
plus cars to come and support your Speed Week. 360 Nationals kind of runs. You
and
know
I
what
think
I mean?
We'll work alongside John, you know, obviously working on some things there, and we've got a good relationship with John Youngquist, who runs the ASCS Frontier region in Montana. And I think not even ASCS Frontier, I think we maybe need to work alongside the ASCS region that runs Western South Dakota, because
oh, yeah.
they, I can't remember what region that is, but they had a 360 race.
No.
They had a 360 race. I think that might be ASCS Black Hills or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact name, but they ran a 360 race the same weekend as ours because John was off, and a lot of those guys went to the Wyoming race instead of coming out here for the big money. So it's like, if we can kind of get them to work alongside us, I think there's another 5 to 8 cars that we get.
Northern Plains?
Yes, Northern Plains.
Yeah.
We get another, you know, 5 to 8 cars there.
Much less maybe getting the national tour back for a swing. I mean, they came all the way to Montana.
They're growing, and I have a super close relationship with the series director with ASCS, you know, National, Lonnie Wheatley. I've known Lonnie for 17 years now, and Lonnie and I talk to him on the phone, you know, once a quarter for, and every time we do, it's a 2-hour phone conversation. But Lonnie and I have a great relationship, and it's something that's being discussed, but I think they're just having to grow.
Yeah.
You know, they got to grow. They got to keep growing, and they're doing the right thing. I said they're taking baby steps rather than telling these guys, hey, boom, we're going to Washington. It's like, hey, we're going to go to Montana. Maybe, you know, next year you spread a little further. So I don't know if that's maybe on the table in 5 years, something we would consider. I think our Bob's race would be tough for ASCS National, though. I'll say that because they'd run here.
And they've got to go to Knoxville. Right
Thursday,
after.
They got to be in Knoxville.
Yeah.
It's possible, yeah. though. I mean, shoot, High Limits here on Saturday, and Thursday they have to be in Port Royal, yeah. Pennsylvania. But that's a little easier. Easier because yeah. you've got the with ASCS, you've got guys still running full time jobs.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
easier with a
full time. High Limit, you've got guys that is their full time job.
Yeah.
So
yep. they're paid to go drive from Skagit to
that's a little bit of
Port
a difference.
Royal.
But you never know. I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't rule anything out with Kev and John, to be honest. I've quickly learned that
yeah.
nothing is not on the table with them. It'll be interesting. Where are we? You look where we are in 2022 to where we are now. Where are we in 2029?
Yeah. 2030.
Exactly. That's closer than I want to ever.
Like little, yeah. Take a look at it in little 4-year snapshots, right? Like
yeah.
freshman,
I mean, even
2-year
snapshots.
Junior. Yeah.
Look where we were 2 years ago to compared to now. I mean, yeah. it's been a light years difference.
And it's still just kind of scratching the surface. Like,
and I really feel like Lisa's really dialing in on some social media stuff on the Facebook.
She is.
And Eric, you've been a huge addition on being able to keep me fed content to put on TikTok
yep.
and YouTube. Like, we will be active on social media, on all forms
oh,
of
yeah.
social media, not just Facebook, all winter long,
we'll
which that wasn't really the case a year ago. A year ago, it was like we were super active on Facebook and Twitter all winter long, and that's it. Now we've got content that we will be at the forefront of everyone's minds 365 days a year.
That's and you have to be. Otherwise, people will move on and...
But Caleb, we'll let you.
Yeah.
I think that was probably as good a time. We'll have you on again, Caleb, because obviously, I mean, we've got a lot to cover this winter. And...
I mean, we filled an hour 15. With
oh, and it was easy.
Problems,
so. Yeah. So Caleb,
worried about filling more.
I can say with 100% confidence, Caleb will be a many time guest over the course of the winter, especially when we've got some topics to talk about
yeah.
regarding racing in the Northwest. And obviously, you know, Caleb, we'll. I'm sure we'll do a Tulsa Shootout Chili Bowl preview coming
oh,
in
yeah.
in December to
yeah.
talk about what's going on.
You lucky guys.
And we can tell Eric what he gets to miss out
yeah.
on there. But
we'll
Eric,
have to watch
Eric's
him.
Also lucky because, you know, he says us lucky. You know, we get to do that. We're lucky, but he's also lucky because this crappy time zone that we're in pays off.
True.
A handful of times a year, and you get to wake up
yeah.
and you get to
wonderful
watch Chili Bowl and Shootout here at the office
exactly.
all day long. So that's not a
exactly.
bad beat either.
Yeah, Eric's not going to miss the 6 a.m. wake up call for the 7 a.m. run to the facility.
That sounds like fun.
I was telling Lisa, she was talking about flights, and I said, well, yeah, last year my Shootout flight, we got back to the hotel at about 1:30, 2 o'clock after Saturday, and what did I get to do? I had a 2:35 Uber to the airport.
Yeah, it was a quick turnaround.
That was like, hey, we'll meet you down here in 35 minutes. So
yeah.
go ahead and shower and pack up, and we'll go to the airport. And we got to the airport, and guess what we got to do then? We had to wait in line for the airport to open for a 5 a.m. flight.
Really?
We stood
you
in line security,
Eric,
and they opened security at 4 a.m., and we were like 50th in line. Like, we're going to miss our flight because they aren't open security.
See, I'd pay to suffer along with that at least once.
Oh, it was.
Eric, you know why you never hear about the Tulsa Shootout after party?
Because there's not one.
Because there is no Tulsa Shootout after party. Chili Bowl
after party.
Chili
Bowl after dark is a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Chili Bowl after dark this year, when we that night we all stayed.
Was
that Thursday?
Yeah.
That was
a
good time.
Earl had a night.
I was just sending videos of Earl in the group chat, a week ago.
Oh, I can't wait.
I cannot wait. Earl is
good for you guys.
My long-lost brother.
He is a gem of a human being.
How
much
do you think
him.
Tyler McKim's blood pressure rises when he cuts Earl and I loose?
At least 30 to 40 points. About as much as yours goes up watching Iowa
yes.
football.
Yes. No, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, when Tyler tells Earl and I, you guys can do your pit walk. I think his finger has never been closer to the dump
to the mutant dump
than it
so
is.
Many times. Well, and then back in the booth, as you know, me and Clinton Wilner sitting there just going, "Uh-oh, now what?"
Yeah, you just see the train wreck coming because Earl and I mean, the train's lifting off the rails
yeah.
at all times when you cut us loose, and it's just a matter of can we keep it on the rails and. Boy, do we skate that thin line, and we love it. We love
that
it.
That line is real thin, like.
There was a couple times where he had to get on the comms and say, settle down, settle down. You are heading in a bad direction. Like, okay, we'll reel this in. But
honestly, the back channel stories of Tulsa are almost as fun as the ones we can tell on air.
At some point, we'll get to tell back channel stories.
One day, when we're ready to not have jobs.
It's in the book. It's in the book. Yes. Yeah, when I have fully retired and I have nothing to lose in life,
right.
The back channel stories will see the light of day.
All right.
It'll be a good time.
Yeah, but no, we'll have you on again, obviously, before the season.
Sound good, boys.
Schedule and WARPA. We've got a lot to cover this off season, and we will, because we're still going to be on the gas.
Oh, always on the gas.
All right. I'll let you guys finish the show up. Right. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for being on, Caleb. We'll talk to you later.
Later.
See ya.
Well, Caleb Hart there, Eric, and obviously we've gone long today.
Yeah,
there's a lot to cover. We're all over the map, but no, it's off season's well underway. This weekend, National Open happening, the third and final, in my opinion, crown jewel of sprint car racing. That is kind of the three crown jewels, obviously, being Knoxville Nationals, Kings Royal, National Open. Those are the three to me that are just stand on their own. And this weekend at the Williams Grove Speedway in Central Pennsylvania, that's the place to be.
Do you have a pick for that one?
No.
No, okay. That's fair.
I'd like to see Darren Pittman get it. He's been so close so many times. He's run second so many times.
There's so many good local guys.
There's some good locals out there. I mean, Macri is out of the picture. He's hurt. Danny Dietrich always steps up to play. Dietrich could get another one. That's who won when I announced it. And we'll see. That's one to watch. And obviously, High Limit, they start to wrap up their schedule. I think they have four races left. Two weekends left. They go to Lakeside next week and then Texas the following week during Trophy Cup. Trophy Cup, we talked about in the show, entries over 50. That's on Flow Racing this year, so check that out.
NARC in California this weekend,
California with SCCT. That's on Flow Racing there at Tulare on Saturday night. Should be a good night there. And that, if you've never watched Tulare,
Watch Tulare.
I can say there's been one race the last decade that has been P1 on my bucket list to get to, and it's Trophy Cup, and I'll check that off. But yeah, I'll be Saturday night. We have college football. I'm not even. Who am I kidding? I will have college football on my TV, but I will have NARC on my iPad.
Yeah.
And SCCT, that'll be a solid field. A great race. And you get a little bit of preview of what we're going to see in a couple of weeks at Tulare, hopefully, with Trophy Cup and a lot of the same guys. But that things are winding down quickly. Obviously, the High Limit points battle is phenomenal, so keep an eye on that. We'll talk about that next week as we lead into Lakeside. And the Outlaw points battle is pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah,
David Gravel is going to be your Outlaw champion unless something catastrophic happens to them.
Even then, I think it would take a lot of
it would
to
take arguably the worst luck in sprint car racing history.
Yeah.
Gravel's been, that's probably the fastest sprint car in the country consistently. But you look at, they've got a couple fast guys there. Macedo's been in the mix. Buddy Kofoid's been a rocket ship. So we'll see. Gravel's tough there. He won the National Open, my first National Open in 2014 in the Roth ride. Very controversial National Open as he and Stevie Smith came together in turn one. Stevie running, as a PA local. And David, I don't think it was as egregious as many people, as the PA fans want to think it was. I think it was just a racing deal. But it's Central PA and everything's a big deal out there. But no, that's the focus. PowerEye back in the Midwest is in action this weekend. That's where Reitzel's heading. He'll head to Lee County where he picked up a $10,000 payday in April. So we'll kind of recap all that next week, and we'll be back next week with another episode. I don't know what we'll do. We'll figure that
out as we go.
And
the offseason will be different.
We'll have to do a Trophy Cup preview next week because the following week Trophy Cup's racing on Thursday.
Yeah.
So it'll just be we might be either off Trophy Cup week, or if you're here, if you're not going, then you can do what you want if you want. You can maybe have Caleb on as a co-host or JY.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'll let you do what you want, or both of them. Yeah. I don't know if the world's ready for that.
I think I can sit for an hour and a half and not talk much.
Yeah. No, it's we appreciate everyone tuning in. If you've got some ideas, shoot them our way. Like I said, we're going to have several longer form podcasts this winter. I mean, Steve Beitler was in the office a week ago.
Yeah. And maybe
not even a week ago. Yeah. And I told him, we said we'll have Beitler on, and I said we know that's a two part, that's a two episode of one.
And we got to have Beitler in person.
We just got to figure out when we can get him on in
person. That's true.
Before he heads out, but maybe we have to do it next week. But nonetheless, we know that that's a two episode. I mean, that's a racing career episode, Skagit Speedway growing up here. probably up until about 2000, and then we'll have an episode of 2000 on. We know, obviously ownership him acquiring side, yeah. the racetrack and now retiring, and Steve Beitler yacht charters and being a boat captain and doing what Steve does is. None of our Chili Bowl stories will be able to come out though, Eric. So
I want to hear some of your karaoke.
Those
stories,
are out of bounds. But, okay. We'll have Steve on. I think we'll get several. I'll work on several prominent national touring stars of
years. Touring stars, and I think some.
Yeah, we can get some,
different aspects too. That won't be drivers.
We can get some crew guys on. Yeah. I'm sure we can get Tyler Swank on at some point.
Spacing his name now. I'll tell you. I remembered, I'll tell you. But
Dave.
Dave Sharpley, I think would be.
Yeah. Dave would be great. Dave would do it. Well, I can get Dave on, no problem. But if you've got ideas, if there's a former Skagit Speedway driver you want to hear about, of years past, and you've got a connection.
Certainly I've got let something us know. First on that one.
Certainly let us know. Of days gone by where we could catch up with a guy. What are they doing now? Mm-hmm. Let us know. Tweet us. Tweet Skagit Speedway. Eric or I. We're both very active.
Yeah. Tweet either our accounts too.
Yeah, let us know. But we love to hear from you, and we will keep plugging along. We appreciate you tuning in for another episode of On the Gas.
Other than that, we'll see you next week. Soon. Take care.